things, but you better take your diamond ring. You better pawn it, babe. You used to be so amused, and Napoleon in rags and the language that he used. Go to him now, he calls you can't refuse. When you got nothing to lose. You're invisible now, you got no secrets.
Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the belated American Awakening. I apologize for that, folks, but evidently we had some technical difficulties there, and I had to reboot, and then when I came back up online, the equipment wasn't working properly. So with that, again, I apologize, but looks like we've got it up going now, I think. Hold on just a minute here. Let's see. I'm hoping. Let's see. Yeah, we're good. Okay. Anyway, all right, folks, welcome to the May 31st, 2017 edition of the American Awakening. I'm your host, Michael Herzog, and as always, I'll be with you for the next, not 2 hours, but an hour and 42 minutes this time. So, okay. Now, folks, if you didn't have a chance to hear John's show today, I want to encourage you to listen to his archive. The Philippine President Duterte has pulled the curtain back on the globalists, and I agree with John. We're getting very close. Duterte is cracking down on drugs in his country and crime, and he knows the CIA has been running the drugs out of the Philippines for years. Duterte refuses to allow this to continue, so now, mysteriously, ISIS has shown up in Mindanao, southern Philippines, and the U.S. won't sell him any weapons to defend against ISIS. Now tell us, does that not speak volumes of who really is directing ISIS? Last night, folks, I gave an update on the status of Tom Lacovara. And for you new listeners out there, Tom Lacovara is the host that was before me, who's in jail on a trumped-up charge in Oregon. And as I mentioned last night, folks, he is due for a status update hearing on the 19th of June and supposedly scheduled for a trial on the 11th of July. So we'll see what happens with that. Now, I'm going to spend the first hour tonight going down the memory trail on Alan Dulles and the ongoing 70 years of despicable debauchery carried out by this group going on right now called the CIA in the Philippines, in Iraq, in Syria, basically anywhere and everywhere. And in the second hour, we're going to hear from Ammon Bundy and what may loom for all of us domestically if we don't win this battle, folks. This is a war. This is a war for our mind, okay? And the curtain's coming down, and these people are showing themselves for who they really are. So without further ado, I'm going to get into this, and I'm going to say that this is going to be a jam-packed show tonight. I may open the phone lines, but I want to get through this, folks, so bear with me here, because I'm going to bring us up to speed down the rabbit hole, and then we're going to hear from Ammon. I've got some other clips I'm going to go through with you as well. So in the book, The Devil's Chessboard, Alan Dulles, the CIA, and the Rise of America's Secret Government, David Talbot, the journalist who founded Salon.com in 1995, and he wrote a great book on the lives of John and Robert Kennedy, Brothers, the book was called Brothers, has produced another page-turner that unearths mountains of new evidence about the seamier side of the rise of the United States Cold War national security state. Now, Talbot has achieved something rare in our scholarly course these days in the origins of the Central Intelligence Agency and the men who were responsible for shaping the Cold War ethos that for decades dominated American foreign policy in the 20th century. And by presenting the contours of Alan Dulles' life and his everlasting imprint on the nature of the CIA in a cogent and highly readable way, Talbot offers us a new and sophisticated analysis of America's secret Cold War history. The Devil's Chessboard is quite simply the best single volume I've come across that details the morally bankrupt and cynical rise of an activist intelligence apparatus in this country, that was not only capable of intervening clandestinely in the internal affairs of other nations, but domestically as well. And you'll see why, and you'll see how, as I go through this. Talbot's exhaustive research, his lively prose, his strong moral conviction, and the ability to convey history's relevance to our contemporary politics make The Devil's Chessboard an invaluable contribution to our understanding of the institutional transformation that took place in this country at a time when rabid anti-communism dominated and the thinking of foreign policy elites. Some passages of The Devil's Chessboard have a plaintive tone, a kind of lament about the irreparable harm the fanaticism of fighting the Cold War against Soviet Russia and its alleged proxies all over the world had on shaping a set of unaccountable secret institutions that both have distorted our politics and determined our democratic principles for which the United States supposedly stands. Exceedingly rare among baby boomer journalists and public intellectuals, Talbot does not shy away from pointing to the uncomfortable facts surrounding Alan Dulles' life work. He chronicles Dulles' secret activities just after World War II as a young intelligence agent in Europe, helping to establish rat lines so the Nazis considered useful to the United States in the new Cold War against the Soviet Union could escape prosecution. Now, Talbot also unpacks Dulles' foundational role, first as a deputy director and then climbing to become director, in setting the course for a newly formed CIA after President Harry S. Truman signed the National Security Act of 1947. What followed under Dulles' leadership were many unaccountable CIA projects that had to remain secret or spun with propaganda to suit the widely held Cold War fantasies of the period, lest they be shown to be so contrary to America's self-image that they may generate opposition. Secret CIA activities in the 1950s under Dulles' watch included horrifying experiments in depatterning and mind control involving LSD and hypnosis, often on unwitting subjects, to try to develop the means to turn Soviet agents. Subsequently, that was MK Ultra. Subsequently, Dulles led the CIA in its first experiments in regime change with the coups in Iran in 1953 and in Guatemala in 1954. It was Dulles, CIA, that played a key role in killing the nationalist leader Patrice Lumumba in the Congo in 1960 and setting up the failed Bay of Pigs invasion in 1961. Now, if you recall, I think it was last Friday, I played a clip of Bill Clinton apologizing to America, I believe it was in 1996, while holding the results, and it was a 500-plus-page report, of the Senate Subcommittee report on MKUltra and the harm done to many Americans. And also, Bill went on to talk about reparations that had been made and people that had been paid because of the loss of life and so forth. So that was played Friday. And I believe it was on Sunday I had the privilege. I took a drive up north with this lady friend that I was had with me for a couple of days. And I had the privilege of meeting her father. Now, I'm going to keep him anonymous. I'm not going to call him by his real name, but I'm going to call him Bob. And in the several-hour, very pleasant conversation I had with this gentleman, I found that he had been in the military in 1954, I believe 1954 through 1959. And interestingly enough, he was in military intelligence. He was in school learning to speak Russian, and they were putting him in an intelligence position, of which I'm not going to say what it is. But at that time, and again, this is in 1954, folks, when he was in his classroom, on the bulletin board, they had a note stuck up there asking for volunteers to participate in an experiment. Now, at the time, Bob was young, like many, a little naive probably to what was going on. So he volunteered for this particular experiment. Now, in this experiment, again, this wasn't involuntary, folks. He volunteered for it. But this is right at the beginning of what was MKUltra. What they did was they took Bob and they put him in a room that was totally black. They wanted to kind of deprive him of all of his senses, sight, sound, smell, everything. Put him in a very dark room with a bed and a toilet. And they gave him, of course, you know, like a hospital gown or whatever to wear. But they kept him in there for 2 days, dead silent, soundproof room and so forth. And the entire time, all they did with him was they continued to play tapes over and over again, making mind suggestions to him to find out what the results would be. You know, things like, you know, your mother's a very terrible person, or, you know, just things like that. And they did this straight for 2 days just to see what kind of an effect it would have on him. And when he got out, he wasn't hypnotized or anything, but when he got out, they were looking to see how long, or, you know, what kind of effect they had. So I'm assuming this was in the early stages of the experiments. And then, of course, later on, they got to the place where they were getting people and they were taking them against their will, which is why Clinton eventually came out after the subcommittee hearings and had to apologize to the American people. So I didn't sense any ill effects from the man. Very intelligent man, very good-looking man, 82 years old. Still, he kind of looks like Elvis Presley would look, you know, when he was 82. But anyway, evidently there was no ill effects. But I was just fascinated because when I was on the topic, this man came out. It was almost like a divine thing where God put me in front of this man, and I could actually hear one-on-one the experience that he had. So that being said, that fit into this. I wanted to tell you about that. And going back to the Devil's Chessboard, it reads like an engaging spy novel, proving yet again that fact is stranger than fiction. The book is full of intrigue and revelations that should make any fair-minded reader cringe at what the CIA has done in our name over the years. And remember, I'm going to tie this in, folks. This was 60, 70 years ago, but this is going on to this day. Talbot's social analysis of the period includes an excellent summation of the work of the great American sociologist C. Wright Mills. Now, Mills died in 1962, but his book, The Power Elite, cuts through the rabid Cold War ideology of the time to grapple with the darker side of the American century. Alan Dulles, who was by far the most influential director the CIA ever had, Talbot shows, was for decades at the center of a secret American foreign policy. And the author clearly understands power, and he knows the extremes to which America's intelligence community was willing to go to save the country from the communist hordes. While serving as a young Office of Strategic Services, or OSS, operating in Europe, Dulles participated in Operation Sunshine, whereby any former Nazi who was either deemed a gentleman, meaning wealthy, or had any information or skills that might be useful to U.S. intelligence in the new Cold War against its former ally, the Soviet Union, could be whisked to safety far away from those pesky Nuremberg trials. A German personality who Talbot calls Alan Dulles, kind of Nazi, is illustrative of the whole Operation Sunrise endeavor. And Karl Wolf, who came from a rich family and passed through the highest echelons of respectable society during Hitler's reign, according to Talbot, possessed the right sort of pedigree and was the type of trustworthy fellow with whom Dulles could do business. It was Wolf who was put in charge of Heinrich Himmler's important circle of friends, Talbot writes, a select group of some three dozen German industrialists and bankers who supplied the SS with a stream of slush money. Now, it turns out that Dulles ignored Wolf's affinity to the Nazi project and helped him escape from being held accountable at Nuremberg, demonstrating that Karl Wolf might not be the kind of guy the U.S. should help. Talbot quotes a disturbingly technocratic note Wolf wrote to the Nazi transportation minister during the war, and I quote, he said, "I was especially pleased to receive information that, for the last 14 days, a train has been leaving daily for Treblinka with 5,000 members of the chosen people, and that in this way we are in a position to carry out this population movement at an accelerated tempo." Thus begins the history of the United States secret government with Alan Dulles present at its creation soon at the helm, showing that in the name of fighting communism, the end would always justify the means, even to the point of forging alliances with those who assisted in Hitler's madness. So, shifting forward a little bit, one disturbing revelation in the devil's chessboard is Alan Dulles' willingness to use his expertise in spycraft and his intelligence connections, including hidden sources of money, to influence U.S. domestic politics as early as the 1952 elections. Back in 1948, unbeknownst to the Italian and the American people, the CIA used laundered cash and secret intelligence assets in Italy to block electoral gains by communists and socialist candidates. This rigging of the 1948 Italian elections was seen as an intelligence triumph at the time and emboldened the CIA to intervene in the internal affairs of other nations. Dulles, as deputy CIA director, couldn't restrain himself from using similar techniques at home. So, during the 1952 presidential race, Dulles proved his loyalty to the Eisenhower-Nixon campaign by channeling funds to the Republican ticket through CIA front groups and by leaking embarrassing intelligence reports to the media about the Truman administration's handling of the Korean War. Flagrant violations of the CIA charter that forbids agency involvement in domestic politics. But moreover, Dulles had no qualms about advocating the assassination of foreign leaders, and even presented a plan to Walter Beadle Smith in early 1952 to kill Stalin at a Paris summit meeting, which Smith firmly rejected. And after Eisenhower appointed Dulles director of the intelligence agency in 1953, the CIA would grow more powerful and less accountable with each passing year of Dulles' reign. Talbot sheds new light on Dulles' role in the CIA-engineered coups in Iran in 1953 when they overthrew Mossadegh, and Guatemala in 1954. Now, these were watershed events in the history of the CIA, since the agency had never before engaged in fomenting regime change and, according to President Harry Truman, was never intended to function as an operational arm of the United States policy in that way. The CIA threw a lot of laundered money around and bribed Iranian officials, as it had done with the Italian elections in 1948, but added new tricks to its repertoire, such as, extortion, radio jamming, false flag operations, espionage, hit lists, kidnapping, and arming pro-Shah, like the Shah of Iran, street gangs to achieve its aims in Operation Ajax. The coup d'etat in Iran in August of 1953 that toppled the democratically elected government of Mohammad Mossadegh and installed Shah Reza Pahlavi, who ruled until 1979, was heralded as a bold and daring U.S. triumph in the Cold War. And today, given the antagonism between Iran and the U.S., it can be seen as a sort of a, well, original sin of failed U.S. policies in the Middle East. A whole lot of them followed, folks, and I've covered some of those on my show. But anyway, getting back to this, Talbot contextualizes Dulles' actions as CIA director, showing that he was operating in an atmosphere of intense anti-communism and xenophobia that permeated the entire American political discourse, especially foreign policy elites. A confidential report cited by Talbot that the retired Air Force General James H. Doolittle sent to President Eisenhower in July 1954 exemplifies the dominant Cold War mindset that Dulles embodied. It is now clear that we are facing an implacable enemy whose avowed objective is world domination by whatever means and at whatever cost. There are no rules in such a game. Hitherto, acceptable norms of human conduct do not apply. The CIA's role in the coup in Guatemala in 1954 that overthrew the democratically elected government of Jacobi Arbenz, who Talbot likens to John F. Kennedy, also reveals the new operational capabilities of the CIA in manipulating the press. The agency's disinformation campaign began immediately after Arbenz's downfall, Talbot wrote, with a stream of stories planted in the press, particularly in Latin America, alleging that he was a pawn of Moscow, that he was guilty of wholesale butchery of political foes, and that he had raided his impoverished country's treasury, and that he was sexually captivated by the man who was the leader of the Guatemalan Communist Party. None of it was true, of course. Talbot's retelling of many of the now well-known facts about the CIA's role in the coups in Iran and Guatemala is cogent but alarming, since many of the CIA's assets and operatives who participated in Operation Success, the coup in Guatemala, resurfaced later as persons of interest in the Kennedy assassination. E. Howard Hunt, David Attlee Phillips, and David Morales. The CIA had a disposal list, if you will, of 58 key Guatemalan leaders at the time of the coup marked for assassination, and even wrote a manual describing in detail how to go about doing it, which was made public in 1997. Now, among the many disturbing revelations in the Devil's Chessboard is the fact that Alan Dulles, after being kept on as CIA director by then-President-elect John F. Kennedy, failed to inform the incoming chief, Kennedy I'm talking about, during multiple briefings that the CIA had already participated in neutralizing the Congolese leader, Patrice Lumumba. The CIA, under Dulles, never bothered to tell President Kennedy about Lumumba's murder, even though Dulles briefed the new president on January 26, 1961, about the situation in the Congo. President Kennedy had to hear the news secondhand from his United Nations ambassador, Adlai Stevenson. And hence, from the start of the Kennedy administration, Dulles kept secrets from his new boss. And no episode better illustrates Dulles' separate agenda than his agency's planning and execution of the Bay of Pigs invasion of Cuba in April of 1961, which ultimately cost him his job after President Kennedy sacked him and Richard Bissell and Charles Cabell. I think I'm going to have a break coming up here shortly, folks. Let's see. So, Talbot's take on this well-known story about the CIA's ill-fated attempt to topple Castro is fresh and engaging. He uncovers convincing evidence that Dulles and his top aides set up the Bay of Pigs to fail in order to force the young president's hand in bombing the island and sending in the Marines. Surprisingly, Dulles and other national holdovers from the Eisenhower administration was President Kennedy's resolve to stand by his earlier warnings to them that there would be no direct U.S. airstrikes and no Marines landing in Cuba. They were sure I'd give in to them, Kennedy later told Dave Powell.
Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
I didn't hear.
It's time for you to have your own custom smartphone app for your business and pay way less than you can imagine. Introducing the I Can Get To Silent Salesman mobile marketing app, a global mobile marketing and communication tool for your business. Go to appsapart.com and learn how you could earn up to $36,351 or more per month just by inviting two people or less into a $14.95 per month program. Go to appsapart.com and be sure to watch the video at the top of the site and listen to the audio message from the CEO near the bottom. This is something you won't want to miss. Go to appsapart.com now or call 646-860-9540. That's 646-860-9540. Get the I Can Get To. That's ICANGET, the number 2, Silent Salesman app at appsapart.com. That's appsapart.com.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
Do you or someone you know suffer from chest pain, blood pressure, cholesterol, or irregular heartbeat? Are you looking for a more natural solution to overcome these health challenges? You hear the ads all the time. If this stuff's so good, why doesn't my doctor prescribe it? That's easy. Doctors are not trained in natural medicine. Extendivite Heart Tonic does want you to be as healthy as you can be, and it really works. Take Extendivite for 6 months and your doctor will say, "I don't know what you're doing, but don't stop. It's working for you." Get the dependability of Extendivite. Just see how you feel in 6 months. A 2 month supply of either capsules or liquid is only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
All right, folks, we're back with the American Awakening. Michael Herzog, your host, coming to you live from the Valley of the Sun. And the reason I'm bringing us up to speed on this, folks, is because when I was growing up, I was always taught in school that the CIA is this agency that goes around the world, you know, and they're spies and they keep Americans safe. And now we've awakened to the fact that that is not the truth at all. They go around agitating, hiring mercenaries, digging in, overthrowing governments, okay, for their one world agenda. But back to this. Talbot's take on this well-known story about the CIA's ill-fated attempt to topple Castro is fresh and engaging, and he uncovers specific evidence and convincing evidence that Dulles and his top aides set up the Bay of Pigs to fail in order to force the young president's hand in bombing the island and sending in the Marines. Surprisingly, Dulles and other national security holdovers from the Eisenhower administration was President Kennedy's resolve to stand by his earlier warnings to them that there would be no direct U.S. airstrikes and no Marines landing in Cuba. "They were sure I'd give in to them," Kennedy later told Dave Powers. "They couldn't believe that a new president like me wouldn't panic and try to save his own face." "Well, they had me figured all wrong," quoted Kennedy. Indeed, they had figured JFK wrong, because the president then fired Dulles, Bissell, and Cabell after their botching of the Bay of Pigs, which they had assured him would unfold in a similar fashion as the successful Guatemalan coup of the Bay of 1954. But as Talbot points out later in the book, President Kennedy's purge of the top echelon of the CIA had not gone far enough. He cites a letter to President Kennedy from W. Avril Harriman. There's one of those names that keep popping up again, folks, who had been FDR's ambassador to Moscow and a veteran of Washington infighting, which refers to the CIA's undermining Kennedy's neutrality policies in Laos and Vietnam. "General George Marshall once told me that when you change a policy, you must change the men, too. And the CIA has the same men on the desk and in the field, who were responsible for the disasters of the past, and naturally, they do things to prove they were right. So every big thing the CIA has tried in the Far East has been catastrophic, and the men reasonable or responsible for these catastrophes are still there." Now, on the subject of the Kennedy assassination, Talbot offers one of the most comprehensive and thoughtful discussions of any book to date. In fact, if one reads carefully The Devil's Chessboard, along with James Douglas's superb book, JFK and the Unspeakable, the reader will come away with a deeper understanding of the crime of the century that synthesizes the most relevant details that 50 years of scholarship and investigation have provided. Dulles's role in the official government whitewash of the Kennedy assassination cannot be overstated. He was so important in directing the aims and outcomes of the Warren Commission's investigation into the killing of John F. Kennedy that it should be more correctly called the Dulles Commission. Since President Kennedy's alleged assassin, Lee Harvey Oswald, was himself murdered in the basement of the Dallas Police Building on November 24, 1963, there would be no trial. Instead, the nation was given a non-adversarial process of presidential commission that runs counter to the norms of American jurisprudence. Didn't we just see that yesterday when that judge threw out the case against Hillary Clinton? And which clearly had drawn the preordained conclusion that Oswald had acted alone before the first witness was ever called. And one of the many questions that Talbot answers in his book is the curious phenomenon of the right-wing Republican Alan Dulles, whose professional and personal connections exclusively consisted of wealthy Wall Street bankers and lawyers, spies and spooks, and foreign policy elites tied to the Rockefellers and the white shoe law firm Sullivan and Cromwell, who President Kennedy fired after he sensed Dulles had lied to him and could not be trusted. He would find himself heading the commission charged. Dulles would be heading the commission charged with investigating the murder of a president that Dulles neither liked nor respected, and also fired him. Gee, that sounds fair, doesn't it, folks? There were no Kennedy allies on the Warren Commission, only Republicans and Southern Democrats. J. Edgar Hoover controlled the physical evidence in the case, and Dulles was in the pivotal spot to guide the inquiries and the witnesses away from any fingerprints of intelligence agencies in concocting Oswald's legend or in the events in Dallas. Serious students of the Kennedy assassination, regardless of their views of the Warren Commission's findings, must read The Devil's Chessboard, if for no other reason than to flesh out Alan Dulles' role in guiding the public's perception of the crime of the century. Talbot cites a little-known French publication from 2002 where Charles de Gaulle, who himself faced an assassination attempt in 1962 that involved a team of snipers, expressed his view of the Kennedy assassination, Referring to Oswald, de Gaulle said, and I quote, "The guy ran away because he probably became suspicious. They wanted to kill him on the spot," talking about Oswald, "before he could be grabbed by the judicial system." And unfortunately, and by the way, stopping right there, next hour, folks, okay, we're going to get a little deeper look at this judicial system, and you're going to hear some interesting thoughts from Ammon Bundy. And I think I'm the first person to report it. I'm not sure. But anyway, they wanted to kill Oswald on the spot before he could be grabbed by the judicial system, and unfortunately, it didn't happen exactly the way they probably planned it would. But a trial, don't you realize, would be just terrible for him. People would have talked. They would have dug up so much. They would have unearthed everything. Then security forces went looking for a cleanup man that they totally controlled and who wouldn't refuse their offers, and the guy sacrificed himself to kill the fake assassin, supposedly in defense of Kennedy's memory. Bull. Security forces all over the world are the same when they do this kind of dirty work, i.e. Robert Mueller, okay, the special appointed Senate subcommittee leader that's going to get to the bottom of this Russian hacking thing. They do it over and over and over again, folks. And as soon as they succeed in wiping out the false assassin, they declare that the justice system no longer need to be concerned, that no further public action was needed now that the guilty perpetrator was dead. Better to assassinate an innocent man than to let a civil war break out, after all. Better injustice than disorder. You'll just have to read the devil's chessboard to learn about the layers of the onion skin Talbot expertly unravels regarding the killing of JFK. Now, in an era where it's given that Wall Street is untouchable, the president can use drones to kill anybody, anytime, anywhere, and the country has apparently accepted the new normal of warrantless mass surveillance by the NSA and 15 other intelligence agencies, which I'm going to get into in a little more depth here in a little while, folks. We need to know about this history. Saying that the secret agencies that emerged after World War II to fight the Cold War have put our democracy at risk is now quaint. A hard look at the history Talbot uncovers shows that democracy isn't at risk. It has been undone. He calls out his contemporaries who cannot bring themselves to contradict the Dulles Commission premature closing of the JFK murder case. And he says this, "Those resolute voices in American public life that continue to deny the existence of a conspiracy to kill President Kennedy argue that, well, someone would have talked." This line of reasoning is often used by journalists who have made no effort themselves to closely inspect the growing body of evidence and have not undertaken any of their own investigative reporting. The argument betrays a touchingly naive media bias, or collusion, if you will. I threw that in there. A belief that the American press establishment itself, that great slumbering watchdog, could be counted on to solve such a monumental crime, one that sprung from the very system of governance of which corporate media is an essential part. The official version of the Kennedy assassination, despite its myriad of improbabilities, which have only grown more inconceivable with time, remains firmly embedded in the media consciousness as unquestioned as the law of gravity. The good news is that compared to the baby boomer historians, the commentators, the journalists, and other opinion makers who are too brought into the status quo to even dream of questioning the Dulles Commission's bogus methods and conclusions regarding the JFK assassination, the young people today are far less kowtowed by the threat of being thrust into the tinfoil hat conspiracy crowd. And as I look around, and I'm going to do a report on this here in the not-too-distant future, on what's being taught in the colleges,
You know, and that comedian, what's her name, that had a bloodied head of Donald Trump thinking that was funny? Okay? This is the attitude of these people, folks. They could care less. They have not been taught how to think. They've been taught what to think. And what they think terrifies the people who have two brain cells to rub together. Can you say brainwashing? Can you say propaganda? After Watergate, Vietnam, the Church Committee, Iran-Contra, weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, Chelsea Manning and Edward Snowden, the fact that J. Edgar Hoover, of COINTELPRO fame, controlled the evidence the Warren Commission used for its preconceived verdict of guilty for Oswald, and that Alan Dulles was anywhere near an official investigation or an investigative body looking into the Kennedy assassination, it takes on new importance and requires a radical reevaluation of the whole sordid case. The Dallas police and the FBI couldn't even handle something as routine as documenting the chain of custody for the two or three 6.5 millimeter bullets found near the sniper's nest on the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository. Let's see. To young people, the Kennedy assassination isn't a primordial childhood event that shaped their worldview like it is for the boomers. It's far more remote, like Lincoln's assassination, something that happened long ago with little direct relevance to their lives. And hence, young people today don't see what a big deal is in contemplating the idea that elements that rose out of the same corrupt and morally bankrupt secret government that helped the Nazis escape prosecution, brought down foreign democracies, or experimented with mind-altering drugs on unwitting subjects might not see any clear limits to their crusade to have the world from what they believed was an existential threat by turning their violent capabilities inward. In today's parlance, we call it blowback, and one doesn't need to wear a tinfoil hat to grasp the potential consequences of allowing unaccountable power to fester. People entering college today were born in the early 1990s and have no direct life experience with the histrionics of the Cold War. When I was in college, I didn't go to college, but evidently this gentleman did. When I was in college, President Ronald Reagan was still scaring the hell out of a country with lurid tales of communists attacking the United States from their safe havens in Cuba and Nicaragua, or even from the rural areas of El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras. The Nicaraguan Contras, along with the Afghan Mujahideen, Reagan called freedom fighters. And Reagan's Defense Department officials such as T.K. Jones spoke loosely about surviving an all-out nuclear war with the Russians. And Reagan authorized the Federal Emergency Management Agency to prepare a host of new civil defense measures. Yeah, we've read some of those. Get to that later. With respect to elite attitude towards nuclear war, the 1980s weren't all that different from the 1950s. You know, remember when it was, and some of you out there are old enough, duck and cover? They told us to hide under our desks, these flimsy little wooden desks with a little metal on there, in case a nuclear bomb went off, that's supposed to save us, right? I was scratching my head and laughing every time I would duck under one of those desks. But what made Reagan's first term all the more frightening was his administration's thinking out loud about the unthinkable. At a time when the United States was deploying the Pershing II nuclear missiles and nuclear-tipped cruise missiles to West Germany, bulking up and modernizing its B-1, B-2, and B-52 bombers, and launching new intercontinental ballistic missiles, or those ICBM systems, such as the MX Peacekeeper missiles, the new D-9 submarine-launched ballistic missiles, the SLBMs, and the high-tech space-based anti-ballistic missile system called the Strategic Defense Initiative. It just amazes me how they continually call it Defense Initiative when we have been offending countries around the world for decades, actually generations, okay? Nobody has attacked us on land that wasn't a false flag since when? The Civil War? Okay, well, let's see. Don't want to get off on a tangent here. Those days of nuclear brinkmanship and alarmism against the Soviets and the widely disseminated propaganda that farm workers from El Salvador were going to spread communism into South Texas are about as remote to today's college students as prohibition was to the baby boomers. Oh my gosh. Thankfully, students totally don't possess the knee-jerk attitude of their parents and grandparents towards looking at the guilt or innocence of Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, millennials have no problem contextualizing the Kennedy assassination inside the rabid anti-communism of an era gone by. They can also Google in a minute more information than we could acquire in a week when we were, you know, going to the library trying to find something out. I remember going down there and spending days. I wrote a book called The Bully Around the Corner back in 1995. An offshoot of Erwin Schiff's book, The Federal Mafia. And I was down in the library for 2.5 months researching. That was before I was able to access it via my fingers on the computer. So perhaps at some point, maybe when the last baby boomer apologist for the Warren Commission passes from this good earth, the country will finally be able to get the realistic understanding of the events of November 22nd, 1963, it deserves. David Talbot's The Devil's Chessboard lights the way forward for those who still cling to the belief that history and truth actually matter. Now, I shared that with you, and I'm going to go to break here in a minute, but I shared that with you to kind of bring you up to speed and give you a reminder of the CIA isn't what they taught us in school, folks. All right? They were supposed to keep us safe. They've made us anything but safe. I'll be back in three. Stick around. It's going to be a power pack next hour, folks. Be back right on the other side.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
I'm getting older and noticing that my body just doesn't work as well as it used to. So I like to keep fit as possible by hitting the gym a few times a week. Recently, I started having a nagging bicep pain and it got so bad I couldn't even lift the weights. When I was complaining about it to a friend, he told me about Angioprim. He said chelation helps remove toxins, heavy metals, and cholesterol in veins and arteries that may cause blockages. You know, after just 1 week of taking Angioprim, the pain was gone and now I'm back in the gym full strength. Scientific research proves the active ingredient in Angioprim has superior oral chelation action that helps promote cardiovascular health. So to learn more, go to angioprim.com. That's Angioprim.com. Or talk to a trained consultant. Call Angioprim toll-free at 877-882-7221. You'll feel better with more energy. Call 877-882-7221 or go to the website angioprim.com.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
About 6 months ago, my wife bought Extendivite. She didn't tell me she was giving it to me. So after about 3 days, I said, maybe the weather's changed or something. I said, my legs feel really good. And she goes, well, I've been giving you this stuff, and it was the Extendivite. And you know that I'm about 75% better. I can actually climb stairs now, and I can get up out of chairs. I can even get down and you know, I got to work under a table or a computer table and work on a computer, I can actually get back up off the floor. You know what? It's an amazing product. I can't believe, I didn't think anything short of having surgery was going to help.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Folks, we're back with the American Awakening. Michael Herzog, your host, coming to you live from the Valley of the Sun. Now, I'm kind of tying this all together, talking about internationally what the CIA has been doing for the last 70 years, while they tell us in our school books that, oh, they're running around the world as, you know, covert agents trying to protect us from whatever, which is totally the opposite from the truth. They're instigating wars all over the planet, including in the Philippines now, where they've snuck their way into Mindanao because Duarte wouldn't allow the CIA to continue to run their drugs out of the Philippines. But that being said, and by the way, I meant to mention to you, you remember that soldier I told you about that was intelligence? He was in school when he got that bulletin off the bulletin board. He was in school learning Russian, okay, which he speaks Russian now. He learned it when he was in the military for his intelligence job, which I won't tell you exactly what it was because I don't want to identify this man for his own safety. But I want to send a shout out to him. Bob, you know who you are. Thank you so much for that story. I appreciate it. Now, I want to take a minute and let you know that we're still doing a pledge drive. We are only about a third of the way to our goal, and I want you to pick up the phone, call 800-724-2719, extension 3, say hello to Mike, my board operator, and make a pledge of 50, 100, you know, 20 bucks, whatever you can afford, folks, because we are in bad need to update some equipment. And as you know, you already know the story, so I'm just going to say, pick up the phone, call 800-724-2719, extension 3, and say hello to Mike. Also, you can go to the website at republicbroadcasting.org, click the donate button, and put a little note in there, says this is because Michael's barking at me, and I'm getting tired of hearing it, okay, and then make your pledge. Or you can send a check, money order, or cash in tinfoil if you want to. It's no, you don't have to put any tinfoil on your head, just put it around the cash, put it in an envelope. Send it to 2251 Double Creek Drive, extension 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Again, that's 2251 Double Creek Drive, suite number 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Now, as I mentioned to you at the beginning of this show, the first part of the next hour, we're going to hear from Ammon Bundy. And I know not of anyone who has aired this yet. This is brand new, okay? And I want you to pay close attention to this, folks, because here we have, just like Tom Lacovara, we have a patriot that's out there in jail. I think Tom Lacovara's, at least last I heard, they had released him into population. But Ammon Bundy and his brother and a number of these people are in jail in solitary confinement, and they haven't been able to have a visitor. They haven't seen their wife. They haven't seen their kids. They are cut off from the outside world, and these people are not criminals, okay? So the reason I'm pointing that out is because the curtain's coming down here. These globalists are being exposed for who they are. Thank God for President Duarte over there in the Philippines who's exposing them. He's basically kicked them out and said, no, you're not going to run drugs out of my country anymore. So what do? They retaliate. Now, all of a sudden, some mysterious coincidence. Oh, my gosh, ISIS is invading Mindanao, and they're killing people down there. Just makes you wonder who's controlling ISIS, does it not? Okay, was it not the Mujahideen that was actually trained by us, funded by us, headed by Osama bin Laden, to defeat the Russians in Afghanistan? And when that was all over with, guess what? We just left and said, okay, bye-bye. Well, they had to find something to do, and we left all their ammunition and guns there. Okay, so guess what? It evolved, folks. Back at the top of the hour, you're going to hear the first segment of the next hour of Ammon Bundy, and I want you to pay close attention, folks. See you on the other side.
For me to figure out, I've paid a price, and I'll keep paying. I'm not ready to make nice, I'm not ready to back down, I'm
homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you. And your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.